TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Helen Caldicott, Nuclear Power, Radiation, and Our Health. It may have taken the Fukushima Daiichi accident to bring the urgent question of the health effects of radiation to the consciousness of a now critical mass of peoples. The island of Taiwan, just off the coast of China and west of Japan, known as the Republic of China, already has three nuclear power plants. The Taiwan Power Company is in the process of completing a fourth plant. It's not well known that Taiwan has an active anti-nuclear movement that works to prevent that fourth nuclear power plant from going online and leads a discussion on how to shut down the existing three plants. Among them is Mom Loves Taiwan, an association of mothers who are motivated by their responsibility and care for life and future generations. Many believe that if people had accurate information about nuclear power plants, they would be moved to demand their closure everywhere, not just in Taiwan. And that information that is so rarely discussed in the mainstream media includes: how does a nuclear power plant produce radioactive material, even in normal operations? What can happen in an accident? And how does radiation enter the body and become dangerous to the health of present and future generations, and really all life, not just to humans and their food? Mom Loves Taiwan asked Dr. Helen Caldicott to explain radiation and health, and she introduced a whole new field of science and medicine that is taught in medical schools, but not in high school or colleges, where it really should be part of the basic requirements, since nobody anywhere is free from radiation. Helen Caldicott is the Australian physician who left a promising career in medicine to become one of the best-known anti-nuclear campaigners. The Smithsonian has named her as one of the most influential women of the 20th century. She's the author of several books, among them Nuclear Madness, If You Love This Planet, The New Nuclear Danger, and Nuclear Power Is Not the Answer. Caldicott explained in the first part of her speech that each reactor produces over 200 radioactive elements. Some last seconds, others, such as plutonium, have a half-life of 250,000 years. That fact is obscured, since the media and the authorities in charge of monitoring radiation report for the most part only on cesium, iodine, and strontium. She then explained the two main pathways of radiation damage. Some elements can strike the body from the outside, much like an X-ray. Others are more dangerous when they get ingested or inhaled and lodge in the body and begin irradiating the cells around them. She said that inside each of the trillions of cells that make up the human body is a regulatory gene that controls cell division. If radiation damages the regulatory gene, that gene then may force the cell to create thousands of copies of itself. That, in essence, is a cancer. We all now have experience with people close to us or ourselves and cancer. As tragic as that is for each one of us, radiation has the power to do damage beyond our individual lives. In part one, Caldicott used the example of a sperm and an egg, each carrying half the blueprint for a future baby. If radiation damages either one, it can show as a birth defect when the baby is born, or it can lie dormant until it strikes future generations. Caldecott described the heartbreaking birth defects that are now becoming common in the area around Chernobyl. Here's Dr. Helen Caldecott with the conclusion of her talk in Taipei, Taiwan, in July 2013. She begins by listing the damage caused by radioactive iodine-131, and she mentions in passing how potassium iodide tablets can protect us and our thyroids.
I'll just give you a few of the elements that are made in nuclear reactors. One is radioactive iodine, and radioactive iodine goes specifically to the thyroid gland in the neck, right? And it's got a half-life of 8 days. That means in 8 days, you might have a pound. In 8 more days, it decays, so you have half a pound. In 8 more days, a quarter of a pound, right? So you multiply a half-life by 10, so it's radioactive for about 10 weeks, and then it decays away to nothing. Now, this is a beta and a gamma emitter. So what happened in Fukushima was the people who were running away, but the government didn't tell them that they were immersed in a cloud of radioactive elements, including radioactive iodine. They breathed it into their lung and it went into their thyroid. Now, one way of protecting yourself from radioactive iodine, if there's a meltdown and you know you're going to be exposed, is to take potassium iodide tablets, which blocks the uptake of radioactive iodine in the thyroid gland. Every person in Taipei needs to have potassium iodide tablets in their medicine cupboard. 9 million people. So then you will be aware that you live in great danger living within 40K of 3 reactors or maybe 4. That's the first thing. Now, the second thing is they're looking at children in Fukushima Prefecture under the age of 18. 12 have been diagnosed with thyroid cancer already. 15 more are suspected, and that's within the first 2 years. We did not see thyroid cancer in Chernobyl until 4 years. This indicates that these children got a big dose of radioactive iodine and lots all the other elements. So in other words, the people in Fukushima are at great risk for developing cancers for the rest of their lives, like the Hibakusha at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The normal incidence of thyroid cancer in children is 1 in a million. And yet the Japanese government has the audacity to say that all these cancers are not caused by Fukushima. The lying that is going on in Japan by the nuclear industry and the government, which are really one and the same thing, TEPCO and the government, and I think it's like this here with Taipower and your government, is really medically absurd. As a physician, I can't believe that politicians would lie to people about their health, because this is a medical issue. Then the next one I want to talk about is cesium, and I'm sure you've read about cesium. There's a lot of cesium that escaped from Fukushima. Cesium-137 has a half-life of 30 years, so it's around actually for 300 years. And you can't get rid of it. And cesium is like potassium, so it goes to the brain causing brain cancers. It goes to the muscle, causing very rare muscle cancers. It goes to the testicle and ovary, causing cancers there or mutating genes. Nasty stuff concentrates in food. Strontium-90 lasts for 300 years too. These are both beta and gamma emitters. And strontium-90 is like calcium. So here's a femur, the thigh bone, right? And you get a little bit of strontium-90 in your thigh, and it sends out beta particles and gamma and mutates a cell that forms bone. And so later you get a bone cancer, and you have to have your leg amputated. Or it mutates a white blood cell in the bone marrow, and that white blood cell becomes malignant and fills the whole body up with white blood cells, And that's called leukemia. Leukemia means white blood. The last one I'll describe is plutonium-239. The body thinks this is iron. So it's stored in the liver, where it can cause liver cancer. It causes cancer of the lung. It goes to the bone because hemoglobin is made in the bone marrow and hemoglobin needs iron. So it can cause bone cancer or leukemia. And in fact, because the body thinks it's iron, plutonium crosses the placenta into the developing embryo. The placenta doesn't let anything through. It's very protective, but plutonium gets through, which can kill a cell that's going to form the left half of the brain or the right arm. And that's called teratogenic. It also concentrates in the testicles next to the cells that form the sperm, where it can irradiate the sperm so mutations are passed on generation to generation, and it can also cause testicular cancer. The thing about plutonium is it's almost one of the most carcinogenic elements known, such that they say a millionth of a gram, 1 millionth of a gram, if inhaled into your lung, will give you lung cancer. Hypothetically, 1 pound, you can't do this, but if it was distributed in every person's lung on Earth, 1 pound of plutonium, they say, could kill everyone on Earth. Each reactor makes 500 pounds of plutonium a year, or 250 kilos. And that's interesting because all you need to make an atomic bomb is 5 kilos of plutonium. And if you want to make a bomb, you can look it up on the internet. The design to make an atomic bomb is on the internet. All you need is a lump of plutonium like the size of a grapefruit. Plutonium has a half-life of 24,400 years. So it lasts for 250,000 years. And America is selling nuclear power plants all over the world. So when you sell a country like United Arab Emirates or Taiwan a nuclear power plant, you're selling them a bomb factory because they can get the plutonium out of the reactor and make themselves a bomb. Oh, but that's all right, because it's peaceful nuclear energy, don't you know? So it's so dangerous. Japan wants to sell nuclear power all over the world. These men, and they're mostly physicists, nuclear engineers, I don't think they really understand what it's like to treat a child dying of leukemia, or even to deliver a baby, beautiful baby that's born. I don't think they understand what life is about until one day they might get cancer themselves. And then I know because on their deathbeds they talk to me and they tell me all the wicked things they've done in their life. 53% of us are women and we're really pathetic. We don't stand up. We nurture life. We give birth to babies. It's time we said, look, you've had enough. We're in great danger and we're going to take over. Don't mention Maggie Thatcher. She wasn't really a woman. Okay, now I want to talk to you about what happens in the food. All of these elements and more landed all over Japan and Europe. When, say, cesium lands on the ground, the grass and the rice suck it up and concentrated about 10 to 100 times compared to the background level. And then the cow comes along, and I can't draw a cow, except that that's the active organ of the cow, the udder. And the cow eats the grass, and it concentrates more, like 100 times, in the cow's milk and the meat. And then a lactating woman drinks the cow's milk, and it concentrates more in her breast. And as it passes through the breast to feed the baby, it can mutate a cell in the breast that can later cause breast cancer. And then the tiny baby is drinking the milk, and this concentrates most highly in the baby. And babies are so sensitive to radiation. So that's called biomagnification in the food chain. And I can't tell you, but so much of the Fukushima food is radioactive. And I heard that they're bringing Fukushima food here and selling it and advertising it, saying it's a good thing to eat. That is criminal. That's like saying, do you want some poison? Ooh, here's some nice poison. Don't worry, you won't get your cancer for 20 years. The government here does not understand. And we have to teach the government and you what the dangers are. That's why we're here. Now, in the sea, or huge amounts of radiation are still being released into the Pacific, like untold amounts. So it gets concentrated in the algae, then in the crustaceans, then in the little fish, and then in the big fish, and then us. So that's what happens in the food chain. And of course, you can't taste it. It's invisible. And it takes so long to get cancer, except it's faster in children and babies. I'm a pediatrician, and I care deeply about the future for our children, or even now. And you know, the radioactive waste that is piling up, you've got huge amounts of it. You've got 2 more years of storage. I don't know what the total amount is, but in the world there are about 100,000 tons of this waste coming out of the reactors. 30 tons from each reactor every year. Tons. So, where are you going to put it? You have to store it safely, isolated from the environment for 1 million years. No container, concrete, steel, lasts longer than 100 years. And as these containers rust and fall apart, so the radioactive elements get out and get into the water and start concentrating in the food. And I can imagine generations hence, the people waking up in the morning, the breast milk is already radioactive, the food's radioactive, the babies are being born deformed, and I've got pictures of deformed children from Chernobyl. There are homes full of the most grossly deformed children with no legs and no arms and tiny little heads and tiny little eyes or one eye. And the babies being born deformed and children getting cancer at the age of 6 instead of 60 because they're exposed to radioactive elements in utero. And an increased incidence of genetic disease, much of it lethal. That's the legacy we leave to our descendants. Now, I know Confucius says that one must venerate the elders. But for me as a doctor and a pediatrician, yeah, elders must be venerated, and I like that too because I'm 75. But the most important people in our society are the children and our descendants. What is the legacy we are leaving to our descendants? And that's more important than the elders, I'm sorry. And that's what we must venerate, our children and our genes and our sperm and our eggs, and protect them for the rest of time. This is a public health issue greater than smoking, because smoking only kills the smoker. Nuclear power is going to kill people forevermore. Now, you have to educate your politicians and say, if you don't close those reactors down, no more reactors in Taiwan, and close them down, we won't vote you into office. But we have to educate people, all the people in Taiwan, through the media. And the doctors have to talk, because it's a medical issue. That's all it is. It's a medical issue. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Helen Caldicott. She spoke on nuclear power, radiation, and our health to a group of concerned mothers in Taipei, Taiwan, in July 2013. Mom Loves Taiwan is an anti-nuclear group that opposes the construction of a fourth nuclear power plant on the island of Taiwan. Helen Caldicott also responded to the question, what evidence we have of genetic damage caused within the exclusion zones of Chernobyl and now of Fukushima. Professor Timothy Mousseau teaches in the Biological Sciences Department at the University of South Carolina.
There's a very good biologist who's been looking at the birds and the insects in the exclusion zones around Fukushima and Chernobyl. And these areas are very radioactive, and they're finding mutations in the birds. White feathers, abnormalities here, a strange beak, crooked tail feathers, and the birds are developing cataracts in their eyes. And after Chernobyl, many people got cataracts and couldn't see, because that's what radiation does. We're seeing it in the birds already. These are firebugs, and you can see they're mutant. Their antennae are crooked, or one is missing, some legs are missing, and also you can see the faces, eyes and nose and mouth, but they're all different. So these firebugs have been mutated. Do you all understand? What happens to firebugs, what happens to birds, happens to us. And the birds he studies, the swallows, have smaller brains than normal. Many of the male birds are sterile. They can't reproduce. And they've got a lot of tumours. Therefore, this is an indication of what the future holds for us. And this is pioneering work. This man will get the Nobel Prize for the work he's doing. It's going to change radiation standards. But he's also at risk because he's going into very radioactive areas. He's a very, very brave biologist, putting his own life at risk.
Helen Caldicott praising the work of Professor Timothy Mousseau. He was one of the scientists who gave a presentation at the Fukushima Symposium organized by the Helen Caldicott Foundation and Physicians for Social Responsibility in New York City in March 2013. Mousseau's half-hour talk can be heard or downloaded free from TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the Fukushima Symposium. Mousseau's full talk also has a very concise rebuttal of the popular reports that claim that the exclusion zone around Chernobyl is a wildlife paradise. Mousseau says that there are no scientific studies backing that claim, and his own work and experience show the opposite. He says it is rather a PR gimmick by the pro-nuclear forces, as well as by the Ukrainian government. The Ukraine wants to benefit from nuclear tourism. Recently, they built a small zoo so travelers can take pictures of a wolf or wild boar through the fence. In her public appearance in Taiwan, Helen Caldicott was asked when she first became concerned about nuclear radiation. She said that as a young woman, she was deeply moved by a book set in her hometown of Melbourne. Neville Shute's On the Beach was later made into a movie.
I lived in Melbourne, Australia, and I read a book called On the Beach by Neville Shute, and it was about a nuclear war that occurred by accident, and everyone in the world was killed. But the people in Melbourne, because it's so far south, were still alive, and gradually they waited for the radioactive cloud to come down. And the government dispensed cyanide capsules so parents could kill their babies like that instead of dying of the revolting vomiting and diarrhea and bleeding to death. At the end of that book, the beautiful, elegant streets of Melbourne were still there. A blind was gently flapping in the breeze, and that was the end of life on Earth. And that image never left me. Then I went to medical school age 17 and I learnt about a man called Müller who irradiated with X-rays Drosophila fruit flies, and they developed mutations for crooked wings and abnormal legs which were passed on generation to generation. And I knew then Russia and America were blowing up bombs in the atmosphere with no heed to what the radiation would do to people, and I couldn't understand what these men thought they were doing. And I still can't understand it. And I still can't understand why they think nuclear power is a glorious thing. Nuclear power plants are actually bomb factories. And sometimes they explode, like Chernobyl. And sometimes they just melt down. But the same elements that are released when you blow up bombs are made in nuclear power plants. So all my life I've been concerned, and not until 1971, when I found out that the French were blowing up their bombs at Muro Atoll in the Pacific, and we got a lot of fallout in Adelaide where I lived, that I wrote a letter to the newspaper, and they published it, and that night I was asked to speak on television about how children could get leukemia from strontium-90 and cancers. And every time the French blew up another bomb, there I was on television. And in 9 months, 75% of Australians rose up en masse, spontaneous marches in the city streets. Postmen wouldn't deliver French mail. People stopped buying French wine or French cheese. So our Prime Minister and the New Zealand Prime Minister took France to the International Court of Justice, and she was forced to test underground. So I saw what President Jefferson said: an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion.
That was Dr. Helen Caldicott. She was recorded at her July 7, 2013 visit to Taipei, Taiwan. The anti-nuclear organization Mom Loves Taiwan invited her to talk on nuclear power, radiation, and our health. They are concerned about the ongoing emissions from the nearby Fukushima reactors. Since the cleanup, according to TEPCO, will take at least 50 years, they also fear that a second serious accident will be triggered by a major earthquake or tsunami. Mom Loves Taiwan also campaigns to shut down Taiwan's nuclear reactors. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. You can get information on how to order a one-hour CD at cost on tucradio.org or by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. TUC Radio's mailing address is Post Office Box 44, Calpella, California, 95418. That's Calpella, California, 95418. For more information, call 707-463-2654 or go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org, for the address and donate buttons. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.